On today's podcast, we have a special guest, Deborah Henson-Komen. She is a Grammy-nominated recording artist and the world's premier electroharpist. She is known for her high-energy shows with orchestra and on solo stages, her evocative singing voice, her fusion of music and theater, and for transforming the classical concert harp into a street harp. She's powerful. She's dynamic. She is a force. She gives you permission to realize the impossible. I am so honored to have her with us today. So join us.
Welcome to the Untangle and Thrive podcast, where we talk about real problems, real clients, and real solutions. Now here is your host, Angela McKinney.
Well, hello and welcome back to the Untangle and Thrive podcast. And welcome, Deborah. I'm so excited to have you here with us.
I'm so happy to be here, Angela.
It's such a joy. You have no idea. I have been following your work. I'm so excited to talk with you today about your instrument, the harp, how you dismantled it, how you refound that instrument, and how you've really, every time I watch you, how you really embody and become music, Deborah. It's just, it's so inspiring. I can't even tell you.
Well, thank you. It is definitely a journey. And it did not start out because I, you know, saw a harp and loved it. So I'm happy to talk about it. So it did, it has been a journey of deconstruction my whole life, which has been really wonderful.
And I think this is why I love working and talking with you today, is because as you know, my specialized skill is understanding unresolved trauma. And trauma is really the instrument sort of inside the body. And at some point in our development with unresolved trauma, we start to go to war with our body. We even try leaving it behind. And often we've got to find ourselves back to deconstruct it and to relearn our body, because it really is, it sort of is the way to wholeness, to healing, to transformation, to discovering new music that we didn't even know we had access to. And that's why I so resonate with your story, with your harp. I think it's so symbolic.
It's that's a very interesting way of talking about it, about seeing the instrument in both the body and also in trauma itself. That's really interesting. And I will say that as my journey was that I started as a kid learning to sing and play the ukulele, and my whole family was just musical. So music was my first language, and I had not learned how to read and write music. So music was very intuitive for me. And it was very much a relationship of my hands to an instrument or my voice, you know, to speaking or singing. And for me, singing was always just an extension of speaking. And so learning the harp as an adult, I learned when I was 22. I'd had a couple lessons as a kid, but I got serious when I was 22. I had the luck to learn the technique as an adult, so I could really think about it and break it down. And I was thinking about that when you talked about the trauma in the body. And one of the things that I was learning when I was first learning the instrument was how to pluck it in a way that allowed the instrument to truly ring. And that required something that I'd learned in PE class, in phys ed, which was that for every action that we take, there needs to be a glide that comes after that. And I was learning this in terms of swimming. And if we are not doing the glide, we're not doing the whole activity. But that happens in music as well, and even in my relationship with an instrument, which becomes like a new part of the body. I've often thought of it as a prosthetic. In order to really integrate with it, it has to be part of the body. And in order for the harp to sing, which is in a sense letting my fingers have a voice, there has to be the physical follow through. So when I play a note, what my hands do afterwards, in some odd way, shapes that note. But now that I'm saying it out loud, I'm thinking that it actually connects it to me. So I am more connected to everything that happens with that instrument.
Oh, that's so beautiful. And I love this idea that music, you know, this musical connectedness was your first language. And often, you know, what happens with trauma is it catches us in a disorganized system. And we start just replaying the same notes in our body and in our thinking and in our behavior. And it's, we start trauma bonding and it just starts to catch us in this sort of chaotic symphony, if you want to call it that, a confusing symphony. It's not harmonizing present connectedness, right? And the technique that's required, and I love that you thought of your gym class, because I wear my ballet shoes because that was technique that was put into my body at a young age. It's a craft of technique. It's a posture. It's working with your body to access parts of you that your brain can't access. And sometimes we have to dip down, down, down deep into parts of us that can remember the time before trauma, even if we were young when trauma happened, that there was a time that we did know that flow state, that experiential state of exploration and gliding and tapping and fumbling and crawling ourselves into walking and fumbling into speaking, so that we are actively engaging in this, the harmonics of this deep, deep knowledge that knows how to flow, that knows how to create, that knows how to move in the world. Because trauma really keeps us from moving. It traps us into immobility. And so the recovery of trauma is into an integrated state of mobility. Which is amazing. Anyway,
when you're saying that, I'm thinking about something that every musician will probably be familiar with, which is that when you're playing a piece, you will often get tripped up by the same measure or the same series of notes when you're practicing it. And I noticed that I'm a performer, but I also have an online school and academy with students from all over the world. So I'm getting to see a lot more. I mean, I grew up just seeing myself, you know, perform and my colleagues, but now I'm getting to see students as well. And often many people who are starting as adults. And although what I'm about to say is true for anybody, that you'll be playing along and you'll get caught up in this one passage that every time you play it, you stumble over it. And people will stop and then they'll start again and they'll try to go there and they'll allow themselves to be stumbling over it every time. And as you were talking, I was realizing that one of the things that it is almost impossible for people to get themselves to do, but it works, is to let yourself flow over that section where you are stumbling and actually play the whole arc, play the meaning of the piece rather than the individual notes. And once you can, and with the trust that you will be able to get it rather than really focusing on that place that of disconnect. And when you can allow that to happen, you can, then it often, it's not like it miraculously fixes itself. Then you can go practice it, but you start getting where it connects at the beginning and where it connects at the end of that stumbling place, instead of always letting that stumbling place stop you. And one of the things that I've been doing recently, especially since we're having this conversation in the pandemic, I wish I could say near the end of the pandemic, but who knows? One of the things that I've been doing is having sessions once or twice a week called Harp Time Live, where harpists from all over the world come, and I set up a groove where people are playing, or a series or a sequence where people are playing. And because they're playing with me, they can't stop and try to fix. But people just move through this. And what there's a lot of healing. People experience it as fun. But I realize afterwards, as they describe their experiences, that instead of stopping and fixing something, they'd realize, well, that's going to come around again. So I'll just get another chance to go through that. And having that sense of like, I'm going to get to go through this again. I'm going to get to do this again. I'm going to get to do this again. It allows that. It's almost like the healing of a line of music, and it lets that connection happen. And often what people discover is, I don't need to do that thing, that hard thing. I can do something much simpler. I can do something that is easy for my body.
I love that. That really lines up to all my listeners who've been listening to me for a while, the Untangle Method, which is a three-step dance, basically. And what you just said was so powerful, because when we're feeling chaotic in that in-between state where we don't quite have our flooring or our feet completely, where we don't really quite understand it, we can grip to rigidity. We can constrict back and move away from it because it doesn't feel safe. Doesn't feel that certainty piece. We haven't gotten it in our body yet. Doesn't feel quite safe to flow over it, as you said. And the practicing of staying with an experience stretches that bandwidth so that we can find the in-between state that's holding the beginning and the end and integrate it, where we do get that experience in our body, right? We get it through working it, or working through it, or working with it, and coming back and reworking it so that we're stretching our capacity to stay with the uncomfortability and at the same time access a new possibility.
Yeah, and the way you're describing it, it does create support. So when I described it, I said, you know, you're able to at least experience the beginning before the disconnect and after the disconnect. If you allow yourself to go through it, you experience both the before and the after. Those become stronger, and then they support your being able to make that connection. But as you described it, I began to realize that as you strengthen what is working, as you strengthen the flow or the meaning of that line rather than the individual notes, you are strengthening more than the beginning point and the ending point. You're strengthening everything around it.
Yep.
And so that was, I had not thought about that before. And the other thing that you said gripping, and that made me realize that when we are playing sequentially, meaning I'm playing from here to there, and I have to get everything right between here and there. And if I don't get it right, it disconnects. Then when we fall into that disconnect, that note was wrong, we are gripping the disconnect.
Yeah.
And we are not experiencing that line as something that exists even without us playing it. And this is one of the things that's become so powerful when I teach the blues, because once you start learning the 12 bars of the 12 bar blues, and that, you know, it's always going to go a certain way and there's going to be a certain support there, you can finally begin to understand that once you start music, the music is going. And then you follow the music. And if it's got sequentialness like the blues does, you can always jump back on that thing. And then the grip is the thing you need to let go of, letting go of that grip of the disconnect.
That's right.
And it's so interesting because we want to control, like, I want to control that I'm doing this right. But when we let go of the grip of disconnect, we're actually allowing the connection to happen.
Thank you. And there is where we heal and grow and stretch and get access to that more creatively present with our instruments, whether that's in our life or actually with an instrument.
That's right. Because then we also have become open not only to what the instrument's telling us, and the instrument has a huge amount that it's telling us, that it's feeding to us if we can listen, but also to everything in the environment, from how you're feeling to your spiritual condition, to the acoustics in the room, to, you know, how your body feels that day. You can start actually playing your life. And one of the beautiful things about music, and especially forms like blues or any improv form, which I love to teach, is that you can start using the music itself to either express what's going on with you, heal what's going on with you, connect with others, and connect with yourselves, with yourself and your instrument.
Yep.
And this kind of brings me to what you and I have been talking about, which is a workshop in which we are using your methods and what I've been developing together to help people heal some of the earliest traumas, especially in their artistic experience, through you.
You have no idea how I'm excited, how excited I am by this workshop we're doing in a couple of weeks, actually. Yep.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, my students heard a little bit about it, but I didn't tell them much. And they were like, when is the Untangle workshop happening? What is it? And half the time they call it the Untangle workshop, but I told them a little bit about it, that it involves the use of fairy tale, of creating your own fairy tale. And so half the time they call it when's the fairy tale workshop? And it's been so fascinating. You know, you were just talking about, we were talking about it as this workshop in which, why don't you just describe the basics of it? Like, how does that fairy tale of your own life work?
Well, so the part you were just talking about, the part that interrupts the movement, the staying with the uncomfortable experience, the staying with yourself and accessing your environment, accessing your body, accessing creative presence, that part of us is what I call the tangled self, which is this hidden part of us that usually rebonds with the traumas of the past. It is the one who is scanning for danger and nightmare scenarios and recreating it unconsciously. And so why I love fairy tales and why I use fairy tales is because the more we can bring in our imagination and in present connectedness, those two ingredients, imagination and connectedness, the more we can start working with those two elements to do the Untangle method, to differentiate between the tangled self system and your present organizer system, the one that stands for the stabilization, for the neutralization, for the access to then access that creative self system. The more we can differentiate between those three parts, and a fairy tale has those three parts to its story, the more then our brain and our bodies become excited by capturing this movement. I love this idea of a line, this line that travels you. Mm-hmm. It's kind of learning how to travel within yourself in a new organizing framework so that you are really using the Untangle method to locate the part of you that gets in the way, that grabs and pulls you back. Then we tend to go to war with that part. Our punitive self goes to war. So it's really about unwinding from that old system to create the space to harmonize within a new system, one that really is engineered to harmonize, to thrive, to heal and transform.
So you mean like the happily ever after?
Yeah, the part of our system that is engineered to really thrive.
So what are you mentioned three parts. What are those three parts?
The tangled self part, mm-hmm. which is the part of us that's unconsciously rebonding with the past. Mm-hmm. The organizer self part, which is the part that interrupts the spell of the tangled self, that starts to discern between what feels real to what is real, what's safe and what's really dangerous, what's really safe for our life today. Often we are mismatched with our present reality. We are rebonding with an experience from when we were 4 or 10 that matched that circumstances, mm-hmm. but doesn't match our life today, doesn't match our ability to mobilize today. Because usually, childhood unresolved trauma, we weren't able to mobilize.
So
we had to shut down, collapse, avoid, disappear.
So that's really interesting. I want to know what the third part is too, but I want to talk a little bit about fairy tales and some of the things that I've noticed in some of the ones that I've been looking at. Well, I've always been really interested in fairy tales and the retelling of fairy tales. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I wrote a bunch of these at one point, like even, you know, not even, well, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer is not, like the Ugly Duckling, and you know, what the Ugly Duckling's therapy session would look like, or, you know, just stuff like that. But, and one of the pieces that I wrote was The Frog Princess, which was about the woman, you know, the frog was kissed by a princess and he turns back into a prince. But then my question was always, and afterwards, and they have a daughter, and their daughter is afraid she's going to turn into a frog like her father. You know, so, that would be the story that I was interested in. Anyway, I'm getting off topic here. I'm just saying that fairy tales are very, very, very rich. And recently I've been thinking about them since you and I have spoken, and thinking about this this story of getting stuck or getting frozen, whether you're stuck like Cinderella in being in a life situation that you can't move out of, or mm-hmm. like Sleeping Beauty, where there's a curse that is put on this little girl that she literally cannot get rid of. She is going to be frozen at some point. And the same thing with Snow White, that this girl gets frozen and then she's in the forest. One of the things that I thought was really fascinating, and you just made me think of it again, is that the spell is there, but there is a secondary force. And it's really beautifully told in Sleeping Beauty, because the spell is given, this child, her future is going to be one of death and basically it's going to be her fault. She's going to prick her finger, and that pricking of the finger is going to not only turn her to stone, basically, or make her go to sleep, but make everybody in the whole kingdom. So it's going to affect everybody. What I think is so interesting about that story is what happens next, which is that another fairy comes and says, I can't change that. I can't change that, what's been said, but I can provide this secondary part of it. Mm-hmm. And that is what I think is so beautiful, because I think that is something we cannot change what our past was. We cannot change what's traumatized us, but there is that secondary force that can come and be part of that tale. Now, I have no idea if that's what you
bring. Yes, that is beautifully, beautifully said. And you're right. We can't change the past. Right. And when we're in a recreation with the past, we're not really present to access that secondary part that you just illustrated. Mm-hmm. So the work is to really understand the tangled self that is reenacting with the past, to understand it in a visceral, real way of presentness, not going back and repeating it, but really gathering the deeper understanding of how it operates in your life. Mm-hmm. The spell it puts on you when you're in that system. As you differentiate between that part and access present connection, you're really creating the conditions then to bring in that secondary option, that there is choice, that there is this new bandwidth to support a new experience, a new response to the experience, and then a new creative, it's almost like a collaborative, co-creative experience that you're creating within your system. And that is where we heal. You know, so often traumatized people get stuck trying to fix themselves,
right,
thinking that if they could just understand it better, if they could fix it, then they would be well.
Right.
But we don't get well there. There's our tangled self entrapment. There's the toxic spell. We get well as we access that secondary illustration, and we access the safety of presence to bring ourselves to a new the experience in a radical new way. That's the medicine of healing, is the healing through this deeper connectedness of awakened choice and getting vision and support to move yourself into that experience.
Yeah, and I'm realizing that in so many fairy tales, there's the opening of ourselves to another, you know, somebody else from kind of from outside, or whether it's spiritual or golden, you know, fairy godmother or whatever it is, that there is another force on our side. Not all fairy tales, like I'm thinking about Rumpelstiltskin. But anyway, I don't want to go down that road because I could just like fairy tales apart forever, because I think they're so fascinating. But what I wanted to say is that when we started talking about this, and we were talking about this workshop, and I said it would be so beautiful to be able to, as we develop the story, to be able to tell that story with music.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly for my students and other harp players or other musicians, to be able to use the workshop not only to be healing trauma, which is why you made the workshop, but to be bringing their artistic self. And I'm sure this would work for people who are drawing or dancing, as well as for musicians.
Yes.
To be untangling your own trauma and making it into art at the same time, which means that that can become an inspiration for others, or it just becomes your experience of it. You know, it helps you heal it. And it also gives you an access to tell the story in two ways, with this art form and with your voice. And when I started talking to students about that, I began to realize that so many of them have an early trauma with the art form. So, for example, harp players, many of them have an early trauma with a teacher who couldn't see who they wanted to be, or in being many people who were very talented put into competitive situations. And there's a joke in the community as people shift from the competitive world of the concert harp to the more community-oriented world of the lever harp or the Celtic harp or the folk harp, mm-hmm. that some people will call themselves a recovering concert harpist.
I believe it. Yes.
Whatever it is that you're recovering from, I'm not going to speak for everybody. Maybe there are people who don't have early traumas associated with the art form that they really want to express themselves in. But I certainly do. And I'm pretty sure every one of my students.
I certainly do. And I'm pretty sure every human does, for the most part, on some little level. I'm so happy you brought that up, because, and also artists, I find, and I work with a lot of artists as well, artists tend to go to art for freedom and safety and expression, mm-hmm. because they feel really shy and unexpressed. And this was my story. Actually terrified of really having a voice in life, but get me on stage and I was colorful, loud, and I could access any part of me on a stage.
Right.
But I was traumatized in the sense of incapable of making eye contact, incapable of really receiving my successes. And when you have a very limited capacity to be seen, and I'm talking about seen in your own skin, not someone else's on
right.
stage, then unfortunately, your system can't regulate success or receive it in a healthy way. And when your system doesn't feel safe receiving success, it just goes unconsciously to destruction. And so the greater success can lead to greater destruction and confusion and trauma.
So tell me how that comes out of like an early trauma, because I was really taken when you said people go to an instrument or to an art form for solace and expression. And I was thinking, wow. And if something happens within that, where they're called out or they're I know this is going to sound weird, but I mean, my mother used to say, as much as she tried to support me, she would say things about my composing, which was, I saw myself as a composer, that were distressing, you know,
yes.
and ended up having, and they won't make sense to anybody else. But I remember her coming behind me and saying, AABA form, how come you can't just make a regular song form? You know, not knowing mm-hmm. that I was hearing a different kind of music. Mm-hmm. I was hearing a more poetic kind of music and not, you know, a pop song. Mm-hmm. And she was wanting to hear that. So if we go to the instrument or the art form for solace, and right in that vulnerable place, mm-hmm. we experience trauma.
Yeah.
Then that comes with us.
Yes, it does. It can, right? We're the only mammals who don't really know how to discharge trauma. So if we don't know how to discharge that from our system, we could start to second guess. We could start to create hesitancy and doubt. We could start to constrict. We could start to get smaller. We could start adapting in these unresourceful ways to protect ourselves from having that experience happen again.
And so So I'm thinking that one of the things that we want to do, since we know that everybody has pretty much had this, everybody who's playing an instrument or in an art form, is to combine what we're each doing in this workshop, right?
Yes,
And, yes. And specifically having to do with music, although I wouldn't turn away somebody else who was in dance, because that's a place where I've had trauma that I would really love to be dancing more than I am. And that's something that I may actually look at in the workshop while the rest of my students are looking at.
Oh, that would be great, because we're going to do some dancing. I think the dance piece to the embodiment of those three parts and learning how to move through them,
right,
is so helpful, again, to give your body access to information.
Right.
You know, it's not coming at everything from our head and attacking
right.
down.
Right. And within the technique of whatever we're learning. This just,
yes.
Let me just ask, we talked about the tangled self, the organizer self. What was the third?
Third is the creative self.
I see. And so in this fairy tale, we will be going, will it be the story of the creative self coming out of the tangled self? Is that what we'll be telling?
Yes, that's accurate. Yes. Because really, when the organizer self is activated, she's the powerful in-between state of those two, we do transform that tangled self into this transforming creative self.
So it's really all the same self, but it is a different state of the self.
Yes.
Huh.
Correct. Yeah. What we know, Deborah, about the neuroscience of trauma resolution is that we have, in our nervous system, we have these different systems. And the more we can differentiate between, say, our unconscious limbic system that's automatic piloted and really engineered to protect us, you know, it's really winning the war of unconscious threat. Often we just don't know the war it's trying to win. And then we're disconnected, and then we're managing all of our disconnected, overwhelmed, fragmented life, okay? Mm-hmm. But if we can start to work and understand that that is just one part of our system, it is not the entirety of our wholeness. And we can start to bring in consciousness and understanding to pull it out a little bit, to separate it. Because the science of integration is about separating out and then linking the parts, not clumping them all together into this sort of single self idea. That we can integrate within these three parts so that we can build more wholeness, more wellness, more integration.
Ah, so that's really interesting. When I teach students about music, I mean, I'm teaching them improvisation, but also structure, because structure is the foundation of creative expression. Having a structure and knowing what that structure is allows you to deconstruct the structure and to create infinite creative expression.
Yes. Yes, because it offers that supportive stabilizer. It offers you a flooring and trusting in a process, right? So you have, you build greater connectedness.
Right. And so that's another reason I was interested in the fairy tale and then how to combine music with it and be able to tell this over and over again to heal ourselves.
To heal ourselves, right? Because when I think of my tangled self and I think of all the trauma and all the terror, that part of my system blocked me and interfered with my receiving more successes in my performing career and all with making money, with multiple areas in my life. Mm-hmm. There is a particular song and musical note that I feel, I'm not a harpist, but if I heard it, I'd know that that was my visceral experience. In that tangled self.
Wow.
And then I would really know what that organizer self, it would be accessing very different notes, very different feelings and sensations, a completely different rhythm, a completely different experience with the music. I would know it viscerally. And I would also then know the creative self system that I have that unwinds my trauma and suffering and really brings me into harmonics. And I would know what that felt like. And they're all three very different. But together, I think they would make a beautiful, my unique song, so to speak.
Well, you know, it's really interesting because in some way, you've described the sonata form, which starts, I mean, because you're talking about this, we don't become a different person. The state of who we are shifts.
Yes.
So in the sonata form, which many people, you hear it all the time, a theme is stated. And then in the development, which is the middle part of it, it is deconstructed and played with in many different ways. And then at the very end, you hear exactly the same theme as in the beginning, but you hear it in a different way.
Yes. Yes, exactly. That's exactly right. I think I shared this with you once, but in my book, I talk about the zebra finches who learn their love song from their father, and they rework and dismantle and rebuild this song. They have them on record doing it over 200,000 times. It might even be 2 million times until they match themselves into their perfect song, whatever that is for them. And then they fly away.
So wait, they take their father's song and then they alter.
They learn it and they work on it 24 hours a day. They're constantly, they have been studying their brain to watch, even while they're sleeping, they're dismantling it and trying to find their way into that pitch, to that rhythm of that particular section of the song. And they just go over and over and over and over again until it matches.
So wait a minute, they have the same song as their father, or they end up having a different song?
It varies a little bit. They learn it from their father, but it's their unique match.
Uh-huh.
But they mirror it with their father, and then they just start to take it and rework it until they feel like it just matches their song. And it's not perfect to their father's, but it's perfect for them.
Wow.
It's beautiful. I know.
That's beautiful. And it reminds me of, again, principles that I give my students, which I learned from harmony theory, which is that you can start with anything and then you can change one thing, leave the rest the same. You can start to alter. You can substitute. You can expand. You can use these three principles everyone can start off with the same thing, but how they expand it, alter it, or create substitutions for themselves, that same thing they all start with is going to end up with something completely different. And that is exactly what I hope is going to happen.
Yes,
we need this workshop, because everyone will be going through the same workshop, and then they will be each developing or discovering, really.
Yeah.
The story, the frozen, the tangled part of themselves, and then go through, I'm assuming, an organizer, which I might describe as deconstruction. It almost sounds like that it is. And then, sorry, I need to cough. And then out of that, allowing the transition and discovering the transition to their true self.
Yes, it's beautiful. I can't wait to do this with you. I'm going to have details on my site. I know you're going to have details on your site. I'm going to enclose them in the show notes. Great. Anyone who wants to get on my mailing list, check out www.untangleandthrive.com and sign up, and you will get an email absolutely giving you the details with this workshop on September 11th, 12th, and 13th. It's a 3-day intensive workshop, people. We're going in. We're going to go deep, and we're going to get access to some craft, artistry, music, technique to support you in thriving, whatever that looks like for you.
Yeah, Deborah, and the experience of discovery through music, I mean, or art. I think I love that.
I love it too. Give them, Deborah, how can people get in touch with you? And your academy starts, tell me when, because if you are joining her incredible 1 year, it's a 1 year program, right? Your academy?
Well, it's a 1 year program, but many people are in it for 2 or 3 or 4 years. So it's a spiral. But yeah, it starts September 15th. So it starts right after the Untangle. The Untangle is part of the first couple of weeks of foundationing and really orienteering in the artistic world. So
So it's a bonus for you if you sign up for her academy. Where can they check out your academy?
They can always go to my website personally is hipharp.com. That's hip as in cool, harp as in the instrument. And then the academy is simple. It's hipharpacademy.com.
Great. And you are one of the hippest people I know. Thank you so much for being here.
I'm so excited
to work with you.
You too.
Okay. Have a great day.
You too.
If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, check out our life skills programs. We take these creative life skills and integrate them into a practice. Check out the details at www.untangleandthrive.com/program.